He patted Kaz on top of the breadloaf-shaped skull as he passed him. Kaz looked at him, and Burton shook his head, figuring that Kaz would find out why when he learned to speak English. But he forgot his intention, and he stopped and rubbed the top of his own head. Yes, there was a very fine fuzz there. He felt his face, which was as smooth as ever, but his armpits were fuzzy. The pubic area was, however, smooth. That might be a slower growth than scalp hair, though. He told the others, and they inspected themselves and each other. It was true. Their hair was returning, at least on their heads and their armpits. Kaz was the exception. His hair was growing out all over him, except on his face. The discovery made them jubilant. Laughing, joking, they walked along the base of the mountain in the shadow. They turned east then and waded through the grass of four hills before coming up the slope of the hill they were beginning to think of as home. Halfway up it they stopped, silent. Frigate and Monat hadn't returned their calls. After telling them to spread out and to proceed slowly, Burton led them up the hill. The huts were deserted, and several of the little huts had been kicked or trampled. He felt a chill as if a cold wind had blown on him. The silence, the damaged huts, the complete absence of the two was foreboding. A minute later, they heard a halloo and turned to look down the hill. The skinheads of Monat and Frigate appeared in the grasses, and then they were coming up the hill. Monat looked grave, but the American was grinning. His face was bruised over the cheek, and the knuckles of both hands were torn and bloody. "We just got back from chasing off four men and three women who wanted to take over our huts," he said. "I told them they could build their own, and that you'd be back right away and beat hell out of them if they didn't take off. They understood me all right. They spoke English. They had been resurrected at the Grailstone, a mile north of ours, along the river. Most of the people there were Triestans of your time, but about 10 altogether were Chicagoans who died about 1985. The distribution of the dead sure is funny, isn't it? There's a random choice operating along here, I'd say. Anyway, I told them what Mark Twain said, the devil said. You Chicagoans think you're the best people here, whereas the truth is you're just the most numerous. That didn't go over very well. They seemed to think that I should be buddy-buddies with them because I was an American. One of the women offered herself to me if I'd change sides and take their part in appropriating the huts. She was the one who was living with two of the men. I said, nah. They said they'd take the huts anyway, and over my dead body if they had to. But they talked more brave than they were. Monat scared them just by looking at them, and we did have the stone weapons and spears. Still, their leader was whipping them up into rushing us when I took a good, hard look at one of them. His head was bald, so he didn't have that thick, straight black hair, and he was about 35 when I first knew him. And he wore thick, shell-rimmed glasses then, and I hadn't seen him for 54 years. But I stepped up closer, and I looked into his face, which was grinning just like I remembered it, like the proverbial skunk. And I said, "Lem? Lem Sharko? It is Lem Sharko, isn't it?" His eyes opened then, and he grinned even more, and he took my hand. My hand, after all he'd done to me, and he cried out as if we were long-lost brothers. "It is! It is! It's Pete Frigate! My God, Pete Frigate!" I was almost glad to see him, and for the same reason he said he was glad to see me. But then I told myself, this is the crooked publisher that cheated you out of $4,000 when you were just getting started as a writer and ruined your career for years. This is the slimy schlock dealer who cheated you and at least four other writers out of a lot of money and then declared bankruptcy and skipped. And then he inherited a lot of money from an uncle and lived very well indeed, thus proving that crime did pay. This is the man you have not forgotten, not only because of what he did to you and others, but because of so many other crooked publishers you ran into later on. Burton grinned and said, "I once said that priests, politicians, and publishers would never get past the gates of heaven, but I was wrong. That is, if this is heaven." "Yeah, I know," Frigate said. "I've never forgotten that you said that. Anyway, I put down my natural joy at seeing a familiar face again, and I said, 'Sharko?'" "With a name like that, he got you to trust him," Alice said. "He told me it was a Czech name that meant trustworthy. Like everything else he told me, it was a lie. Anyway, I just about convinced myself that Monat and I should let them take over. We'd retire, and then we'd run them out when you came back from the Grailstone. That was a smart thing to do. But when I recognized Sharko, I got so mad, I said, grinning, "Gee, it's really great to see your face after all these years, especially here where there are no cops or courts." And I hit him right in the nose. He went over flat on his back with his nose spouting blood. Monad and I rushed the others, and I kicked one, and then another hit me on the cheek with his grail. I was knocked silly. But Monak knocked one out with the butt of his spear and cracked the ribs of another. He's skinny, but he's awful fast. And what he doesn't know about self-defense or offense. Sharko got up then, and I hit him with my other fist, but only a glancing blow along his jaw. It hurt my fist more than it hurt his jaw. He spun around and took off, and I went after him. The others took off, too, with Monad beating them on the tail with his spear. I chased Sharko up the next hill and caught him on the downslope and punched him, but good. He crawled away, begging for mercy, which I gave him with a kick in the rear that rolled him howling all the way down the hill.